author of The Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Welcome back to Radio Gorgeous.
It's very lovely to be back with Radio Gorgeous.
So we started with Recipe for Love.
Some time ago now.
Yes, and then we did a vintage wedding.
Yes.
And now we're here for...
A Summer at Sea.
A Summer at Sea. And I am sensing a progression. You always have... I'm making a big supposition here. It seems to me that your books always come from something personal.
Yes, I think they do.
They do. And or you throw yourself into a personal experience, like flamenco dancing or, you know, or cooking, baking off and, you know, doing all kinds of crazy, wonderful survival things. But this book felt like it was much more personal. You were digging deeper.
This book was quite personal, actually, because... I've known the puffer that features in it, stars in it even, you could say, for over 40 years. And the friends who own it and look after it and run it, I've known also for over 40 years, slightly longer than the puffer because we knew them before they bought it. And so that makes it very personal. And the midwife that my character is, I got to know the midwife who delivered my daughter, my granddaughter. And, of course, she's very special to me, so that was lovely. And she came to me saying that she was doing an MA in creative writing and could I help her with structure? And I did think, MA in creative writing, you need to ask about structure. But then I thought, well, I could get to know the midwife and I could ask her if she'd mind if I had a midwife in a book. And she was delighted, and she's so passionate about it. She really infected me with this passion and this real interest. And it's a real vocation, being a midwife. And I really got into it very much, and I sort of felt very, you know, passionate about it, actually. And when the midwives went on strike and they went allowed sort of one tiny little bit of wage rise, and people were complaining that they were striking, saying they shouldn't strike. And I was just thinking, these women work so hard. They do not desert you in the middle of a labour because they've done their hours. You know, this is so unfair. And I found myself being quite tearful. And thank goodness we weren't near a phone. We were in the car. Otherwise, I'd have been phoning in and ranting, and that would have been very bad for so many reasons. But I just thought it's because I've really taken on this midwife thing really quite strongly. And no, and I still want to talk about it. And although I've written the book now, Mandy and I are still going to meet up and have lunch. And I'm going to still make her tell me about the delivery she's had. And she tells me, and I cry, because I just feel it is a very important thing and a very emotional thing, and very worked very well for me with this story.
Mm. I would say I found myself welling up quite a few times.
Did you? Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah. And that definitely comes through. And there's also the fact that our male lead bears your maiden name.
Yes, he does. Yes. I'm always stuck for names. I'm always stuck for names because I'm frightened of getting somebody's name wrong, and there's a real person called that and I've made them a villain. And because I have had to go on Google and Google names and thinking, oh, can't have that name, oh, can't have that name. So I thought I'll just go with my name because I have of Scottish ancestry. And so I thought, well, yes, I'll give him, you know, I'll give him one of my two maiden names. It was double barreled, so I thought, I'll just give him one. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And I know, at least I know that's sort of all right.
Yes, and he's a good guy.
And he's a good guy.
At heart.
He's a really good guy.
He's a good romantic
that's okay.
Hero.
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, and also, you know, another personal thing is that you started off your married life, you know, on the boats.
Water. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, I did. Yes, we started off, we had a narrowboat built for us, and then we converted another one. Actually, at the boatyard where... Nick Walker's boatyard, which is how we met Nick and Rachel, and subsequently the puffer, subsequently the reason for all this book, when we were having, you know, really early on, in the very early 70s, when we first was doing our business. And then we, and Rachel used to come and help me cook. In fact, she says I taught her to cook. I really didn't. But she used to come when our crew was on holiday. She would come for a week or so, and she was brilliant because she knew all about the boat stuff, and she was great in the galley as well. She used to bring her lovely dog, Rupert, who is just a joy, who features also in the book. I thought, let's bring back Rupert the Red Setter. And so that was, again, quite personal. And so I did know, I was very secure in what I was writing about because I knew the puffer, I knew the world of, you know, cooking for passengers. And I love that part of Scotland. It's very, very beautiful. And the midwife thing, I'd done a lot of research and so loved it. I became sort of very emotionally involved in the whole midwife thing. And I expect I always will be, really.
Mm, yes, from now on.
Yes,
you're wedded to it.
That's forever.
Listen to us online, on your phone, download a podcast, or on your tablet. Radio Gorgeous, there for you.
Okay, so we've led nicely around to, could you, in your words, tell us the story of A Summer at Sea?
A Summer at Sea is about a midwife who has a little blip at work and she's a bit fed up. She feels that the system isn't really supporting her work and the work of her colleagues, and she needs a break. She hasn't had a break and she's overtired because midwife, you know, if your babies all come at once, you do have time off, but you also have to sort of, you can't have a lot of time. You can't say, well, I'll take 3 days and wait for the, you know, if your the next baby is there, you just get enough sleep so you're safe and carry on. So she was overtired and hadn't had a break for ages. And then she gets this call from her old friend saying, look, I'm stuck, I'm really pregnant. I thought it'd be all right. I would be all right till the end of the season, but obviously I'm not. Can you come up and help cook on my puffer? So I was on very familiar ground there. So up she goes and has a whole new life up in Scotland. And her dilemma is, does she go back to her very good and successful career, or does she risk everything and make a new career all for the love of a good man up in the Highlands and Islands? Well, if you were betting, you could probably earn quite a lot of money. If any bookmaker would take your bet that this story will end happily.
But I think, again, I'm going to make a supposition, but with this book, you have gone beyond romance because this heroine is a career woman and, you know, and it is, as you say, for the love of a good man, but it's not just for the love of a good man. This is a modern romance.
Well, it is quite a modern dilemma, isn't it?
Yes, she wants job satisfaction.
Yes.
And she wants a family life.
And that is quite hard to have, because can you have it all? You can have nearly all, but you can't have completely one or the other. You have to compromise, which, of course, life is all about compromise, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. And yes, it was quite a dilemma for her, because I really wanted her. The romantic story was that she would go off to Scotland and marry her lovely man. But I had to make it so she could have a life there, even if she didn't have the man. Mm-hmm. And I always like to think when I write my novels, if you took the romance out, it wouldn't be as jolly, but there'd still be some sort of story. The career development, you know, some development has happened in my heroine's life that she's moved on in some way. Otherwise, it's just a nonsense. I mean, they are mostly a nonsense and just fun. But for me, they have to have a little bit of something, whereas something has changed. But I think in this one, the career development was a sort of more noticeable thing. Mm-hmm. And I did have to, you know, work quite hard and think quite hard how she would feel. To, you know, would we all? I mean, really, those sort of Shirley Valentine stories, which it isn't really, but you know, when you go off and live a whole new life in another country, you know, is it really going to work? Mostly people, you know, do creep back. You know,
I've had my struggles.
You've had your struggles. Exactly. And so, you know, I did have to work quite hard to make sure that it would work for her. And there would be something else for her apart from the lovely man and obviously her lovely friends.
Yeah, so I was so happily surprised to meet some feminism in romance and to have, you know, a real exploration of that for her, of what it's like. Okay, I want a career. I need job satisfaction.
Yes.
I'm in a caring profession.
Yes.
I want a family life. I want a man. I want babies.
Yes, exactly. And it's quite difficult to get all those things in real life because, you know, there are only so many hours in the day. And it is quite difficult. And of course, I watch my daughter because she's wants a career. You know, she loves her babies, but she would go mad if that's all she did. So she needs something other than. And I think that women do want something other than, however much they want their babies. And, you know, it's right that they should want their babies, but they should have their baby, but they should have something else as well. Because your babies aren't going to be with you forever. You don't want to wake up and suddenly find that, you're an empty nester and you've never had anything that wasn't to do with your babies. I don't think it's good for the babies to just have a mother who is just taking them to this class or that class or whatever and not having anything that's theirs that's going to keep them going when they've all upped and left.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah.
Well, and also it's just for children to see, if they see you as an example of you working and whatever
yes,
that means.
Yes, that work is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Yes, and it is a good thing. I think everyone is better if they work. I think they're happier, they're more contented, they've got more, you know, in their lives than if they just look after children. Because looking after children can be quite boring.
Repetitive,
exactly. And you don't see them. You can do things every day and you know they've got to be done again the next day. When I was a housewife, which I was for quite a long time, I would have a little bit that I would clean, or have a little shelf and I put some flowers, and I thought, those will still stay there tomorrow. They're on a very high shelf. The children can't reach them. I won't have to do that again tomorrow. But everything else, the washing, the wiping the floor, the bathing, the putting them to bed, lovely as it is, and it's particularly lovely when you haven't done it for a while, I have to say, and you're a grandparent, you suddenly think, oh, this is wonderful. But then you think, did I think it was so wonderful?
You have the benefit of nostalgia.
Exactly. The benefit of nostalgia, and you're only doing it, say, one or two nights. Mm-hmm. You're not doing it night after night after night after night. And so, yes, that does get quite dull. So I think women do need something that's a bit more fulfilling and something that will keep them going afterwards.
Mm. And I love how you say that, you know, if you take the romance out of it. Because there was so... I think there's... The elements of romance in this one are not just the people. There is Scotland. There's
yes.
the puffer. There's Maisie. Tell us about
Maisie. Well, I think that old people are a lot more fun than a lot of people realise, because they've lived their lives and they didn't, you know, you didn't come out of the womb being 87. You know, you've lived a bit to get that. You've probably had a few romances yourself. You know, you've got a past. And I feel that this should be acknowledged and respected. And I think I loved Maisie. Actually, on the puffer, when I've been there, there's always a wife. There's the man who loves the steam, and he's there in the engine room doing the coal, absolute time of his life. The wives go because he's so happy. And
the
they sit
widows.
And they knit. Steam widows. And they sit by the wood burner, and they knit and they chat. And I've always liked that, because I love to chat, as I was saying earlier. And so, that's... And you get lovely stories from these people. And so she was quite an important character for me. And also I wanted to put in Fair Isle knitting, because I think that's another very romantic thing. Because Scotland is very, very romantic. Me and Queen Victoria, we both thought so. And so that was another aspect of it that I enjoyed. But she was sort of made up, but she's an amalgam. I've met some lovely, lovely older people who've been hugely entertaining and very wise, and I think that we should all have them in our lives. And I also think they should go into schools and talk to the kids, because I think so much history is lost. Every time one of these lovely people dies, all their wonderful stories, their experiences, it's gone. I remember once I was going to do a WI thing, and I was very early because the weather was bad and I had to get my daughter to deliver me there, and it was all a bit complicated. So I arrived a little bit too early for them. I said, I'm so sorry. It's awful when the speaker's early because you have to look off. And she said, well, don't worry. And she sat me next to this old lady. She introduced me, and she said that she was 95. And she was telling me, she said that she could remember before the First World War, this is going back a time, and she remembers her father wearing a smock with a ploughman's thing to indicate that you go to hiring fairs and be picked, because he could, it said in his smock that's what he did, which is a real bit of history.
CV.
Yes, exactly, on his smock, and you knew you'd be hired for a year at a time at the hiring fairs, which was amazing, and remembering before the First World War. And there was another funny story that was associated with that, because this other woman came, and because this woman was complaining that there's somebody who was saying that they were too old. She's only 87, in a very sniffy way. Anyway, I went to
youngster.
Exactly.
Upstart.
How weak, how feeble these young people are. They've just got no backbone. Anyway, off she went. Off I went then to another event sometime later. And I was recounting meeting this wonderful woman. And this the younger person said to this slightly older woman, said, well, you know, you're quite old, you know, what's your secret? Because I asked this woman what the secret was. She said, an onion every day. She said, I have it in my soup, I have a bit sprinkled over my salad. It's my secret of a long life. Anyway, I said about the onion. And this woman's, and I said, oh, well, what's your secret? And she leaned in and she said, 20 cigarettes a day and a bottle of whiskey a week.
Skip the onion.
Exactly. Don't bother with the onion. Just stay with the fags and the whiskey.
The fags and the booze.
So, as I say, old people have a lot of wisdom.
Katie Ford, thank you so much.
It's been brilliant fun. Thank you.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us. Contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com. And to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
Been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.